Organize Me Radio, episode 42, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in the Organizing Industry. I'm Naima Ford Goldson. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Organize Me Radio. I'm Naima Ford Goldson, and today's guest is the owner of Simple Organization. She's the founder of the Ferguson School in Atlanta. She's a fellow founder of the National Association of Black Professional Organizers and one of my business partners for Ebony and Orderly. Please welcome Tiffany Blassingame.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Naima.
Tiffany, thank you so much for coming on. You know, I'm always so excited to chat with you. And we are going to talk about DEI today and neurodiversity. But first, can you tell everyone how you got your start in the organizing industry?
Well, like most organizers, I've always been organized, since a young girl growing up in South Carolina, and like always needing to have things in place and in order. And it wasn't until I went through my divorce that I began to look at different ways to use my strengths to make money. And so, you know, I got connected somehow to NAPO, and I started just researching the organization, researching other professional organizers. And this was probably around 2007, 2008. And I began to understand that this was actually like a real thing, like people who have these strengths are actually organizing in homes. And because I'm an educator, after I spent some time doing some general organizing, I began to move more into my niche of student organizing.
So you are the Director of Inclusion and Belonging for NABPO, which is the acronym for National Association of Black Professional Organizers. And you've also done some DEI work for NAPO. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So, of course, I'm passionate about DEI and all things inclusion, belonging, equity, justice, liberation, all of those practices. And I found myself feeling like that wasn't represented in the industry as a whole. And so with NABPO, I was able to begin to design a program, the Allies of NABPO, where we can begin to have cross-cultural conversations with organizers in our industry, different trainings that our allies attend with our members of NABPO, as well as sending out information around all things diversity. That's really been helpful to kind of being this bridge between our organizers of color and the majority organizers in the industry. Same thing with NAPO. I lend my voice to NAPO, and I have helped design the DEI course for professional practices for their education. But much of my work is through my own speaking, with chapters, at conferences, just one-on-one conversations with organizers, just kind of bringing to the forefront this area of DEI and how important it is for our industry.
And why do you think diversity, equity, and inclusion is a necessity in the organizing industry?
Well, for so long, the organizing industry has been mainly middle-aged white women. And so when we think about diversity, we're not just thinking about, you know, black and white, right? We're thinking about race, we're thinking about gender, we're thinking about age, we're thinking about sexual orientation, we're thinking about socioeconomic status, we're thinking about learning differences and how we just really go about the world with thinking about your immigration status, like so much, right? And as like, I love to travel. And as I travel around the world, like I see different aspects of organizing in different ways, but I don't see that in our own country. Like I see some of the same things. I see the same TV shows with the same women that, you know, fit that mold of middle-aged white women. And so to me, it's important for this representation of, you know, all different types of organizers to be shown, not just within our industry, but to our clients, because clients want to feel comfortable with who comes into their homes. And one, diversity is important for that, but also inclusion and understanding. You know, it doesn't matter if you are a white woman going into a black man's home, but do you understand some of the things, his experiences, and how that might, how he might want that to show up within his home? And same thing with productivity. So thinking about that, it's really important for us to, you know, have a good understanding of who we're serving and how we support each other in the area of DEI.
I love how you mentioned, you know, of course, this is a middle-aged white woman dominated industry, but there are a lot of people of color, especially in the recent years, who have started their organizing businesses and who are out there. And I think it's important to note as well that the shows that they have, now granted, there are not a lot of organizing shows, but the organizing shows that they do have rarely show women of color, the popular shows anyway. How do you think that could be changed? Do you think that the TV industry can change in that aspect to show more representation of Black organizers?
Oh, absolutely. I think that is possible. I think we're still not as visible to them right now, for whatever reason, maybe because they're not actually looking, but we're not as visible. So the more we have these conversations and get involved and have resources to support the work that we do, because the truth is that, you know, the reason that middle-aged white women have been able to start businesses is because they generally had some other external support where they could focus on their business, right? And for organizers of color, we may not have had that generational wealth. We may not have had that encouragement to start a business. If you look at the numbers, in 2019, I think the average Black woman-owned business gross revenue was $24,000 for that business. So imagine you trying to live off of that. And imagine how much extra work you have to do in order to make twice that, just twice that much, right? And so it's difficult to be seen when you are just trying to keep up.
Wow. And you know what? And I think it's like, when you think about it, there are a lot of organizers that we know who have other jobs as well, you know, who have other jobs who have to supplement, you know, their income with other things. So you might not always be able to focus solely on the organizing part of your business or your organizing business because you're doing, you know, everything else.
Right.
Who benefits from DEI initiatives?
I would say absolutely everybody. One, we live in this multicultural, multiracial, multilingual society. Like that's where we are. Like that's where we live. And I would say that that's in pretty much in any country that you go to now, right? There are people that are moving all over the world, and so we all benefit from it because we're actually beginning to broaden our perspectives, right? One of the things that I recommend, one of my biggest suggestions when trying to support DEI, you know, one person, if a person says like, what's the one thing that I could start doing now? And I say, pull out your phone and look at your Instagram or your LinkedIn or your Facebook, Twitter, wherever you are mainly. And who are you following? Not who's following you. Because whoever you're following, that's what you're taking in all the time. So if you're not taking in different perspectives, other organizers might be following you and that's great, but who are you following? Like, how are you being able to constantly gain different perspectives? So we all benefit.
I think it's great that you mentioned that, because that's a way that organizers can add DEI practices to their businesses. By following organizers of color, seeing what right. we're doing, seeing what's, you know, going on in our world. How else do you think organizers could benefit from DEI practices?
I think it also helps them support their clients and to get a more diverse clientele. And, you know, regionally, right, organizing looks different. Like, it looks different in the rural areas than it does in an inner city. And so it may be more difficult to obtain diverse clients, depending on where you live, if you don't live in a place of diversity. But that doesn't stop you from being able to connect with a diverse market, whether that's through your social media, whether that's through your email list, if you're getting people of color on your email list, and not just people of color, you know, people with abilities or disabilities, people of different ages, men on your list, that, you know, mainly the people who seek our support are women. But if you can get more men on your email list or as your followers, like, that's how you're able to reach more people, especially now that we are more virtual than we've ever been, right? We can step outside of our town, our city, and reach more diverse clientele.
So, speaking of, you know, diversity, inclusion, people of all abilities, you work with students as an organizing productivity coach, and some of your clients are neurodivergent. Who would be considered part of the neurodiverse community or clientele?
So neurodiverse people would be people whose brain differences affect how their brain actually works. So that could be people on the spectrum with autism. That could be someone with ADHD, someone with anxiety, twice exceptional people. So people who are gifted and have some form of learning difference, people with dyslexia, dyspraxia. It's a range. it's a huge range. And I think it's important to note that's not necessarily affecting their intellectual ability. This is more of just how their brain works and then how they respond to the world.
So what is your approach for working with these different clients? I imagine everyone's ability is different, so I'm sure you have to tailor things to them, but what is your first step?
I work primarily with students, but my first step is getting to know them and what their goals are and what they want and what challenges they have, the times when they felt most successful. I always start with what I call an empathy interview, where I just want to talk with them. They don't know I call it an empathy interview, but that's what I call it, right? I want to really feel and understand what they go through and what their challenges are. I want to know when they felt most successful, so that however that looked, that can happen more in their lives, because they're already thriving because they're working on the things that they need to work on. But being able to say, like, this worked, and this doesn't have to be a one-time, two-time type instance. Like, we can make this a part of your routine so that you feel more successful throughout your days.
So for parents who are struggling with organization for their children, trying to get them organized, trying to help them understand how to maybe organize their room or organize their things or their schoolwork, but they, you know, aren't successful with it. What is your advice to those parents to get them started, or what approach should they take?
So that's the question I get most often from parents. Like, what do I do? What do I do? One is to figure out a routine or system that works for your family, particularly when it comes to school or learning, and however learning looks, whether that's homeschool, you know, in-person schooling, whatever it is, that you have some type of organized routine where you get things together at night, even if they're learning from home, that they're a part of that. So like putting the backpack by the door with everything that's in it, if there's PE and they have to change PE clothes on that day, you know, that those things are there. If they are homeschooling in their first class, that they're doing an online class, or maybe they know that they have to work on a certain project, that everything is set up to work on that project the next morning. So once they eat their breakfast and do whatever they're going to do, when they go into their space, they're ready to work on that. It's similar to how we ask adults to, you know, before you leave work, like, clear your desk off, get things set up. If you know you got a meeting and you want to bring this resource or whatever, like, just go ahead and put it out so you don't forget it, because who knows what might happen in the morning, right? So it's the same thing for kids, and then they become a part of that routine. And the other thing is, for teachers, we call this make your thinking visible. You might see teachers use a lot of graphic organizers and ways to categorize information, especially when there's a project, like, you know, let's sort this information and figure out what we're going to do with it. It's this similar for organizing, right? Like having a calendar that's visible, that's color coded, that everyone can take a part in managing the time of the family. So that if you have a teenager, that they're putting all their stuff on there because they have a lot. If you have doctor's appointments, that's put on the calendar. The day that PE is for the student that's going to elementary, like, put PE on there so that they know the night before. If it's on Thursday, on Wednesday night, oh, there's PE tomorrow. I need to put that in my backpack for the next day. Trash day for the 13-year-old that's starting to take out the trash, that you put trash day on the calendar so they know that this is when they're supposed to put the trash out. All of those things of different ways to keep, to help support their working memory, really keeps them moving forward in the right direction. And it keeps you, parent, from having to say the same thing over and over again. Just like, hey, go look at the calendar and, you know, is it trash day tomorrow? Oh yeah, it is. Okay, you know what to do. And then go on about your business.
I love that. So then that leads me into our next question of, like, productivity tips. What are some of your top productivity tips for someone who might have ADHD, autism, or another learning challenge?
One of them is spacing, right? Like, do something, like, work on whatever you're working on, and then give yourself a break from it. Because oftentimes, particularly people with ADHD, they can become hyper-focused. Like, we think about, you know, ADHD and, like, not being able to, you know, pay attention to what they're doing. But once they get into something, then they can become hyper-focused on it. And they actually, to be even more productive, they need to take a step away for a minute. That could be, you know, go for a walk, especially for parents. Like, I would say, like, hey, like, you're working on this project and I know you really like it, but we're going for a walk at 5. And then, you know, setting that timer and then going for that walk, finding ways to kind of space what they're doing, because if not, while they're all involved in the work, their quality of the work could begin to wane off because they don't recognize how tired their mind is from focusing on that one thing.
Okay, so you mentioning hyper-focus, and now I'm scratching my head like, that sounds a little like me. Can you explain a little bit more about what being hyper-focused is or what that is?
So hyper-focus is so involved that you literally can't take your attention off for something. So even with other distractions, you're just gonna zone out of that, right? You know, I've had kids with ADHD at school that were so busy on the Legos that they peed on themselves. Because like they just could not pull themselves away from the leg. Like they didn't even feel the urge to go.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. I'm not to that extent.
Okay. Just if that has happened, you know, it's perfectly normal, but you know.
You know, there are times where I'm just so like, I want to get it done that I just, you know, I'm focused on it, but I will say I do take breaks in between. If my kids need me, I'm up and I'm, you know, taking care of whatever they need. And
Yeah. So there is a difference there. Hunkering down is different than hyper-focus.
Okay. Got it. I'm hunkering down. That's what I'm
doing. Right, that's what you're doing.
Down. Okay. Can you tell me one of my favorite things to ask everyone is about your favorite organizing products? Can you tell me what your faves are? I know what one of them are, but tell everybody else who doesn't know.
Okay, well, I love planners. I absolutely love planners. My favorite planners are the Passion Planner, the Black Excellence Planner by Mamie L. Pack, and Leslie Josell's Order Out of Chaos Planner for students. I love dry erase calendars. I love any kind of calendar. I love the time timer, which is the visual timer, particularly for kids. I use that at home and in the classroom. In the classroom, I also love like a schedule, you know, like a visual schedule that has the subject or whatever the activity is, and then the time, digital and as an analog clock. I love to see teachers do that. An analog clock is also one of my favorite products for helping kids to understand how to feel time, because they don't actually feel time. Like they don't know what 2 minutes feels like. It's not until they have to like watch that little hand go around two times before they really understand like that's what 2 minutes feels like. But like just waiting for it to change on the digital clock, that's not the same thing. So analog clocks for homes. I love notebooks. I don't know if that's an organizing product, but I love them too.
All things productivity.
Right. Yes.
Love it. Okay. So Tiffany, can you tell me what is your greatest achievement as an organizer, organizing coach, business owner?
So not many people know this, but I started my business twice. So the first time I started, I made reference to that, was when I was going through a divorce and I started like trying to figure out how to make this work. But I was really, you know, becoming a single mom. I was just going through a lot. And so I really couldn't give my attention to it, like to the research part of it. And while I was a great organizer, there was so much about business that I didn't know, and that I didn't even know that I didn't know. And so I just kind of dropped that idea. And then it wasn't until 2015, almost 10 years later, when I decided to really get started and to carve out that time for myself. But it took a lot of work from like 2008 to 2015 on just growing myself and who I was, and becoming, you know, comfortable with what I knew I could provide and give to others and serve in this way. So I think my greatest achievement was coming back to do what I loved. And I think there are more stories out there from business people that we don't hear. So thanks for letting me share that, Naima.
I love it. You know, you're one of my favorite organizers, so I love hearing about you. Well, Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you, you know, letting us know about, you know, diversity, DEI, diverse clients. And I'm sure that this will help people with, you know, realizing maybe, you know, they're a neurodiverse client, or maybe they have neurodiverse clients where they need to accommodate when they are working with them in the future. Can you tell everyone how they can find out more information about you?
Yes, I am on Facebook and Instagram at TWBLASS, TWBLASS. That's where you can find me. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I love posting relevant articles and, you know, current information in about our industry and DEI and education. That's where I try to blend all my worlds. So at TWBLASS, Simple Organization, Facebook and Instagram.
I love it. Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Naima.
Thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to tune in next time for an all-new episode.